Thank you so much for being with us today on Aircascadia KBOO.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, climate and energy. Huge issue, and one, I think, pressure driving this race to extinction as overpopulation, too many people requiring too many resources. There must be a way to live within the bounds, within the carrying capacity of the planet. Can you talk a little bit about why activists are out there, why the urgency of this action and others like it?
Yes. Certainly, but first I just want to make absolutely sure everybody hears what's up, because we are preparing for a major action tomorrow, Tuesday at noon, lasting as long as necessary. We are gathering at the Cathedral Park boat ramp. This is because we expect Shell's Icebreaker to depart on Wednesday morning. So we want everybody who cares about this issue to go down to the water. The point of going down there is to hold a water vigil to celebrate what's really sacred, which is the water, a stable climate, and our stories. So we urge everybody who wants to be involved, you can text this number, 23559. You just text to that and hit at @ShellNoPDX, and you will be part of our rapid response text loop, and you'll stay up to date on all the latest information on this vigil. That includes media, that includes any activists that want to be down there. Again, for your listeners, if you haven't had a chance to grab a pen, it's you want to text 23559 and send the message @ShellNoPDX. No PDX. Yeah, in terms of the issue, I'd like to draw the United States in particular, high energy consumers in the United States have played in creating the climate crisis. I mean, up until very recently, it was the U.S. that was the number one polluter, and now China has surpassed us. We really need to lead by example here in the United States if we expect other countries to do the same. As we know, the journal Nature reported that to maintain even a 50% chance of avoiding catastrophic global warming, which is, some people say it's at 2 degrees Celsius, others say we've already surpassed very dangerous levels when we're just approaching 1 degree Celsius. But even to maintain a 50% chance of avoiding catastrophic global warming, we cannot drill in the Arctic. We need to leave 2/3 of all fossil fuels in the ground by 2050. This is not according to Greenpeace. This is according to the International Energy Agency. And another study that hasn't gotten nearly the amount of press that it should have is NASA's former top climate scientist, Dr. James Hansen, said just a couple weeks ago in a study that we could see 10 feet of sea level rise by the middle of this century, inundating Portland. In fact, ironically, the port where the Seneca is being repaired right now would be underwater. So we absolutely need to turn this around. Here in the United States, we need to stop exporting all of this oil, gas, and coal that's planned for the Pacific Northwest. We know that 5 times the Keystone XL pipeline's carbon content is planned for export from our ports. And the Climate Action Coalition, which I'm a part of, has taken a very strong stand against this. We are calling for no new fossil fuel infrastructure. We've been joined by the Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon in taking this stand, and we encourage everybody who cares about the future of this planet to join us. So,
Daphne, hang on a second.
Come down to the water. tomorrow at noon.
Stay with us for just another few minutes if you like. I want to invite Dan Ritzmuth of Sierra Club Seattle to join us in this conversation to inform people about the action taking place tomorrow at noon at Cathedral Park. And come down there, bring your kayak, bring whatever type of floaty you've got, or just bring yourself down. This is drawing a line in the sand. So with your permission, if you'd like to stay on and join the conversation, we're going to bring in Dan Ritzman right now. Good morning, Dan. Thanks so much at very short notice for being with us today.
Yeah, good morning, Chris.
So you up there in Seattle, you the kayaktivist action inspired the action taking place in Portland to a great degree, and I know that activists up in Seattle are planning to come down and do more of the same here, the FEDICA. I want to ask either one of you, how is it possible to repair 39, don't call it 40-inch gash in the hull? That would be the business end of the bow of an icebreaker in what, I guess, a couple of days. What did they use? Duct tape? I mean, what about maritime laws? Aren't there going to be, isn't this going to be inspected? I mean.
Yeah. Chris, I think, I mean, that's a really great question, right? I think that's part of how the feeling that people have that so much of this, you know, the efforts of Shell have been in secret, and the different approvals that they've received, you know, all of that information really hasn't been made public. And what the public does know is that Shell has this abysmal track record of their, you know, in their efforts to drill in the Arctic Ocean. And back in 2012, they had a Keystone Cop-esque series of mishaps with their ships pulling anchor and almost running aground, and fires in the engine room, and, you know, big chunks of ice chasing them away, and millions of dollars in fines for pollutions, and all of that ended up with their old drill rig, the Kulik, running aground on off Kodiak Island when they were trying to tow it out of Alaska in the winter to avoid paying taxes. You know, so all of these issues have happened, and it's happening again this year. You know, this year we look at it, and they've had issues with their inspections as they brought their ships over, and they, you know, as they were moving around the Fennec, as you point out, an icebreaker who seems to be designed to run into things with its bow, cuts a gash in it, you know, just as they're just shuffling ships around up in, you know, in the ice-free waters of Alaska. So, you know, of course the public's should be deeply concerned and is demanding, you know, that they be held to a, you know, a higher standard. And that's why one part of why people are out there, you know, in the kayaks, because they, you know, they're disappointed with these decisions.
Disappointed doesn't even be, in my case, doesn't begin to touch it. Either one of you got a question for either Daphne or Dan to consider, and that is, who signs off on this? Did anybody go out there with a clipboard and kick the tires, tap the hull? Yeah, this seems like if it ran into anything, it would be just fine. Who does that? I would think it would take a long time to inspect it.
Fortunately, we have a senator, Jeff Merkley, who has put forward a bill to stop Arctic Ocean drilling here in Oregon. So we need to support that. Because we know that the Department of Interior has estimated that there's a 75% chance of a large oil spill exceeding 42,000 gallons of oil should these drilling leases in the Arctic be developed. That's a 3 in 4 chance. Basically we're just saying, screw it. We're gonna spill all over the Arctic. So thankfully, here in Oregon, we do have a senator who's willing to stand up for the Arctic. It's the Stop Arctic Ocean Drilling Act of 2015. That's one piece of the puzzle, but clearly we also need to be targeting our president, who has signed off on this, and say that he can't be a climate leader if he is doing this kind of nonsense and pushing exports the way he is all over the country.
Dan, are you still with us?
I am indeed.
Thank you. I ask this question of all my guests. We've been talking about this now for a couple of weeks at least on the show, and that is, what about maritime law? Where is governance on this situation? I cannot imagine that much any of this is legal. The thing that gets me is they say, well, it's an uncharted shoal. Why are they using charts? Charts have been obsolete for over a year now. You use sonar. You use depth finders. I don't understand why
I think, Chris, this is, again, one of the ironies about this whole process, too, is they're only able to drill for oil up there because all of the burning of fossil fuels that we have been doing has been melting the polar, Arctic Ocean sea ice. And that Arctic Ocean sea ice is at about, less than 50% of what it used to be. It's, covers much less area in the summer, and it's about half or less thick than it used to be. So that's opened up these shipping lanes. And I think you're right, your question, we're way, shipping safety in the Arctic is way behind the times because it's just happening. So of course the industry is up there, trying to get ahead of the curve for these safety regulations, and the big International Maritime Organization, as I understand it, sort of the overlord of regulating shipping, has just starting to tackle these issues in the Arctic.
That's all we have time for. I hold that thought. We got the both of you back very, very soon to continue this conversation. But for now, my guests have been Daphne Wisham, the Director of Climate and Energy Program at the Center for Sustainability, and Dan Ritzman with the Sierra Club in Seattle. This has been Air Cascadia for Monday, July 27th, 2015. Kate Welch engineered the show today. Thanks, Kate. Kathleen Stevenson's a KBOOAM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts, know your rights, take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Summer Concert in Dawson Park, featuring a live performance by Bamba y su Pilon de Azúcar Band on Wednesday, July 29th at 6:30 p.m. The mission of Summer Concerts in the Park is to bring cultural diversity to metropolitan area residents. Bamba y su Pilon de Azúcar Band play a full range of popular and traditional salsa, son cubano, timba, and tropical styles as cumbia, merengue, y bachata. Again, that's the Summer Concert in Dawson Park with Bamba y su Pilon de Azúcar Band on Wednesday, July 29th at 6:30 p.m. Dawson Park is located at North Stanton and North Williams Avenue in Portland. More information about ticket prices and directions can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.